sit down with our special guest, the dynamic Zoe Pellier. Zoe is the Director of Equity and Associate Performance at Castles Brock & Blackwell, a trained executive coach, an experienced speaker, facilitator, and educator who also owns two successful Wax on Wax Bar franchises in Toronto. But today, she's here to talk with us about her brainchild, a podcast called The Field with Zoe Pellier, a project of the heart fueled by her passionate stand for restorative and social justice. Welcome, 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 Zoe.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be with you always.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. I've been an avid listener. I'm so moved by what you're up to. And I think we should probably let our audience in on all things the field so that we're not the only ones that are in this glorious secret, although your subscribers have grown like crazy recently. So what I know about the field, sharing the stories of formerly incarcerated people and inspiring a future where they are seen for their humanity and not judged for their past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Thanks. Yeah. That is the idea. It's really, the goal is to bring the stories of formerly incarcerated people into the homes of, you know, anyone and everyone, to be able to share stories that are so often not heard, and to hopefully shift hearts and minds, and the dialogue around criminality and incarceration and what that means.
In listening, I was super present to how intimate it is. There was something profound and moving about that experience. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing there.
Yeah, well, I have to thank all the guests that have been willing to come on the show and share so openly about their stories and their past. Their vulnerability and their willingness to truly open up is what I think has really allowed people to understand on such a deeper level how these things happen and why people end up in circumstances that they never expected to end up in.
Yeah, I think that's the impact of listening is exactly what you just shared. I got super present to you. It could actually be seemingly innocent and then a major implication.
Yeah.
It changes their lives and it's remarkable. Speaking of people on, you've had some incredible, incredible humans on. I had the pleasure of listening to Jason Wang, to Richard Bronson, and who's been, or which, it's probably going to be hard to choose, but I'm going to set you up here. Like, you know, what's been your most memorable so far?
It's so hard for me to. It's so hard for me to answer that question because they all have for different reasons. I will say that my interview with Jason Wang was the one where I really got choked up and had to kind of rein it in and really manage myself because I knew if I, you know, shed a tear, it would be over. So yeah, his story was really, really moving and heartbreaking and inspiring and, you know, the whole spectrum, but that was true of so many of the stories in the season.
I found the same with that particular interview. I really had to rein myself in order to actually listen and paused a few times to take a breath, actually. I was really present to what a beautiful human he is, and yeah. You know, hearing the beautiful humans in the stories was really moving. What's your hope when people listen?
Is really exactly that. It is seeing the humanity in each person. It's recognizing that just because you can't necessarily picture yourself having ended up in that situation, you know, which is something that often makes it easy for us to kind of label and toss to the side. It's really, you know, sharing that deeper understanding of how people end up in these situations and that lead them to spend time in incarceration, and that they are still humans and that they're still deserving of a second chance and that they're still deserving of an opportunity to re-enter society, you know, with dignity and with an opportunity to get back on their feet and become the productive members of society that they want to, that they also have the ability to share their gift. Like, I believe we all are born with our unique gifts that we are meant to share with the world. And it's, you know, for most people, it's on them to choose to unlock those gifts and to share them. And for people who've been incarcerated so often, it's actually society that prevents them from being able to share those gifts. And so for me, it's really hopefully allowing people to understand that and then hopefully taking it the next step further and working to create opportunities. You know, if there is a, you know, someone in HR or a hiring manager who's listening to the field and then has someone who applies who has a criminal record, actually taking the time to get to know that person and to speak to them and to ask them questions and to understand where they're coming from and to give them an opportunity.
A chance to begin.
Yeah.
And recognize for their gifts. I love that you said that. I was so flabbergasted by how stacked the system is against them. No ID. Like, wow. I was like blown away.
Yeah. And it's not like you have money. You're not given any sort of resources. You're just, you know, the doors unlocked, the gates unlocked, and you're basically just let out sometimes with a subway token and that's it. And if you are lucky enough to have a family member there to pick you up, amazing. And many people are not. And so then what do we think these people are going to do?
Yeah.
What would you do?
Yeah. Amazing that, you know, when you, again, I was really struck by Jason Wang. And when I listened to his story, I mean, he's gone on to create amazing things with his life.
Yeah.
It is amazing to think about all the amazing things that have occurred by some of your people. I mean, what are some of the things that your interviewees have gone on to produce for themselves, like companies, organizations? Can you speak to that?
Yeah. I mean, the list is endless. There we have, okay. So episode one with Desmond Mead, he, you know, I don't want to share too much of the story and give it all away, but essentially his story to me really epitomizes why I created the podcast, because he was released from prison and he was homeless and he had lived with addiction previous to his incarceration. And of course, you know, yeah, you spend this time in prison or in jail and you don't have access to whatever it was that you were using beforehand, but now you do, and no one's given you any therapy or treatment or anything to actually address the root causes of why it was that you were engaging with substances in the first place. And so you're kind of just right back into that cycle. And that cycle for him drove him to the verge of taking his life. And he found himself at the edge of the train tracks and the train didn't come. And he took that as a sign to turn his life around. And he fought tooth and nail to get there. And he ultimately ended up going to law school. And he has now started or is running the Florida Restoration Rights Coalition, which is the organization that's responsible for the bill in Florida that restored voting rights back to all of the Floridians with felony convictions, 1.4 million and counting Floridians who were ineligible to vote. And of course, and I mean, I could go on. his story is incredible. And there's way more in that episode, but that's one example. Glenn Martin, he started the Close Rikers campaign, which was successful. Rikers hasn't been closed, but I think there's a lot more awareness about what's happening within Rikers, and it is set to be closed as a result of his work. Started Just Leadership, and organization for formerly incarcerated community leaders to provide kind of leadership training in community to support them in the work that they're doing in the world. Richard Bronson started an organization that is helping formerly incarcerated people get jobs. There are a number of people on the podcast that are doing things in that space as well. Jason Wang also is. I mean, I feel like the list just goes on. We had Joseph Lauren, who is in Canada, and he is working to get help people who've been incarcerated to get housed, something that's also a huge obstacle. I know I'm missing a ton of people, but that's it. Cos Marte started a gym called Con Body. He lost a ton of weight while he was incarcerated, just doing sort of circuit workouts in his cell. And he started Con Body, and he used, I mean, his story is incredible and actually also highlights something. And then I'm going to stop talking, but take
it back. Please don't. This is it. This is how it's intended here on Talk to T.
Okay. I'm talking. That's for sure. Exactly. So this is something that I think is so fascinating. It's one of the things where, as we're talking about people being able to share their gifts and use their skills. So Cos was an incredibly high level drug dealer in New York City. He was supplying the majority of the Lower East Side with cocaine for a number of years. And he had a bunch of people working for him, and they had cars and they had telecommunication systems, and they would have to pivot, you know, on a dime. And so he's running this whole operation. He gets taken down. He ends up incarcerated, and he comes out and he starts Con Body. And when you think about the entrepreneurial skills that go into running that kind of an operation, like, those are very transferable skills. They can be used to do something that doesn't land you in prison or jail. And so that's what he's been doing. And he's built this really incredible fitness company and brand in New York. And what's so incredible is, for so many people, you know, and entrepreneurs and small business owners, like, COVID hit and it took a while to pivot. Everyone was kind of stunned. No one really knew where to go, what to do, you know, what next. And Cos, within a day, had all of his classes online. Like, they were running Con Body on Zoom immediately, because knowing how to pivot is something that he was really used to. So, a lot of really, really interesting stories have come out.
That is incredible. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. Like, I never even thought of that before, but turning those skills into something that doesn't land him in jail, that understanding already how to pivot, giving him an advantage. And then who knew when COVID hit that the world would need to pivot and learn that skill quickly. Like, how brilliant. And what an amazing opportunity. And I think that there, you know, the thing that struck me about each one of the individuals that I listened to was that, you know, there was something in them also that caused them to see opportunity and sort of flip the switch in their situation. What do you think that thing is? Because they kind of were at choice.
They were. I know. It's
interesting, right?
I've tried to get at it. And it's different, I think, a little bit different for everyone. I did ask Jason, you kept kind of getting pushed down and then you kept getting back up. And what is that? And I don't want to put words in his mouth, and he said it much more eloquently than I will, but really, like, you can kind of just sit there and die, or you can get back up and brush yourself off and figure out what's next. And those are kind of your options, right? So, you know, I wanted to keep going.
Yeah, definitely can't put words in, you know, each of your interviewees' mouths, but it just, like, is a testament to the strength of the human spirit.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. But I also think there are a couple of key elements that differentiate the people who ultimately end up being, not even being successful, but having the ability to transition more easily on the outside. And they are, number one, education. So for a number of these people, they were able to access education while they were incarcerated, or they had it beforehand. And so they were really able to sort of learn and grow and develop and then put that learning and knowledge to use on the outside. The other really is a mentor. It is a supporter, a champion, like somebody who believes in you, who is willing to be there, that has your back. And that's, for some people, there is a family member or there is someone like that, you know, in Jason's story, very clearly his mother, you know, and for other people, Desmond being a great example of this, like, there wasn't really anyone at that time. And so how do you find that strength within yourself and really believe in yourself when what you're seeing all around you is that no one else really seems to believe in you? So, you know, it's, you're digging really deep for that.
Mm-hmm. I really want you to share with us the impetus for the podcast. What for was sure. that?
So I have spent a lot of time working in and around the legal system, and I'm now a non-practicing lawyer. And before that, I was a restorative justice practitioner, and I worked with an organization in Toronto called Peace Builders. So let me actually just back up for a second, because the story kind of starts before that. So I was born to, I'm sort of your first, second, third generation immigrant, depending on where you look in my family. My mom was an immigrant. She and her family immigrated to Canada when she was about 13 years old. She did, English was her third language she learned once she got here. She spoke no English. My dad's father immigrated from Macedonia. He also spoke no English. And his mother was born in Canada to immigrant parents who also came from Macedonia and also spoke no English. And so my parents grew up experiencing being the other. And they were very intentional in raising me and my sister, instilling in us the importance of looking out for people who were being otherized and really, you know, recognizing that we all are unique and we all bring our gifts to the table, and that it's not okay to be mean or hurtful or disrespectful to someone because they look different, speak different, think different, you know, practice a different religion, any of those things. And so that's just been a huge part of my life. And they, you know, they didn't really just talk that talk. They also walked the walk, and they have done a lot of work in that space. My dad has done a lot of pro bono work. And my mom, who was a lawyer, is a lawyer as well, saw a lot of the issues within the justice system. And she eventually started an organization called Peace Builders. And Peace Builders does restorative justice work with young people in Toronto, helping to divert them out of the criminal justice system. They also have like an advocacy arm and an education arm. It's an incredible organization. And so I spent a number of years working with Peace Builders. And when I was working there and before I went to law school, I was in charge of running the youth programs. And one of the programs that I ran was a prison program in a detention center in downtown Toronto for young men who were on remand, which means they were being held awaiting trial. And so what we did was we had two programs. We ran a literacy and mentorship program where we would bring in, we had a roster of incredible volunteers, and we would pair them each with a different one of the young men that was in there, and they would get to develop a relation, a mentorship relationship. And so we would work on, you know, literacy and supporting them with their schoolwork, but there would also really just be kind of that, it was that mentor, that person that you kind of have in your corner. So we had that. And I also ran weekly discussion circles. And so I would show up with my co-facilitator and we would sit down and say, what do you guys want to talk about today? And they would always have such incredible things that they wanted to speak about. They wanted to speak about the treatment of Black youth in the justice system. They wanted to speak about how to make the right friends when you get out. And what do you do about the friends that really aren't going to help you stay on the track that you want to be on? And So we would get to explore all of these topics and really get to know the young men who were in there and to know them as humans. And so the time that I spent working there is some of the most impactful and rewarding work I've ever done. And it was also simultaneously some of the most heartbreaking, because you would see these young men and you'd see them get out and then you'd see them come right back in and you talk to them about what happened. And it was never anything that really should have landed them in jail to begin with, for the most part. And certainly not what jails and what prisons were ever created for. That, you know, the purpose wasn't to be housing children. It just wasn't. Yeah. I got to see, as a part of that work, the challenges that people faced coming out and then reentering society, because jails and prisons aren't in North America. And this isn't true everywhere in the world, but it certainly is true in Canada and the US. They're not designed to support people to succeed after they get out. And so what is a 6-month sentence, a 1-year sentence, a 5-year sentence often becomes a life sentence because people are labeled with whatever that thing is for life and they come out and then there's no ability to get housed and there's no ability to find a job. And eventually there's a lot of money to be had on the streets. And that feels like a better option for people. And also often the only option. So you see that revolving door really in effect. And so all of that to say that that experience really stayed with me. And all of these years later, I was doing a leadership development program with the Coactive Training Institute. And a part of that program was to develop a leadership quest. And it was to address an issue, big or small, could be helping to pick up garbage in a park in your neighborhood. It could be, you know, something on a larger scale, something that you feel passionately about. And for me, it was this issue, which is, as a coach, I believe that for the most part, we are the greatest obstacle to anything that it is we want to do. And there are also people for whom that isn't the case. And this whole population of people who I had worked with, who had been incarcerated, felt to me like, yes, they can all go on and do anything that they want to do. And they have the skills and the abilities and the brilliance to do them. But as a society, we don't actually allow them to, or we make it so challenging that, that most people give up. And how can I do something that's going to address that? And what I ended up realizing is that for so many people who haven't had the experience that I had, they're just not even aware of these issues at all. They've never really thought about it more than like, oh, you're a thief or a murderer or whatever that is, like labeled for life. I really wanted to give people access to the truth of who these people are.
And so you have indeed. Like, I think if there were written intention, you know, we might say you nailed it that you've just described, because that is indeed the experience. So what a journey, Zoe. You know, the thing that I love the most, well, I love tons of, you know, what you're sharing with us, and the podcast in itself is brilliant, is that you took action and you did the thing, because you could have traveled that journey and done nothing with that. What was it like in the beginning? They got you to the launch of, we're doing this thing. Like, talk to me about that.
Yeah, it was terrifying. So it felt at first really big. And I was like, is anybody going to listen to this? I don't know how to make a podcast. I don't know I don't even know how to, what is the first thing that I do? So sort of started there, then just started having conversations with people and started having conversations with people I knew who had podcasted, and with friends, and planting the seed. And everyone seemed to think that this was a great idea. And I was getting the sense that people would at least listen. And so I ended up eventually being connected with an incredible podcast producer, and we had an initial conversation. And at the time, I did not believe I was ready to start. I was just really having an exploratory call. And I thought, like, maybe somewhere down the road, we'll reconnect. And we had this call, and he was just the perfect person. The podcasts that he's producing are really, like, his interest is being in the impact space. He wants to be working with people who have or are trying to have a social impact. And we had such a great call, and I knew he was the right person to help me bring this to life. And so I just kind of took that next step and started working with him. And then I took that next step and bought podcasting equipment and took the next step and started reaching out to at least the people who I knew, who I was hopeful would come on as guests. And they started to say yes. And so we started to record. And so it was kind of that, I kind of think about it as like a roller coaster of feels really terrifying. Then all of a sudden I have the equipment and I have the producer and we start having these interviews, and before I have the first one, it's terrifying. And then it goes well and we're having these amazing conversations and it's so exciting. And I'm like, yes, everybody's going to listen to this. This is so great. And then we get to the point of launching and all of a sudden I'm terrified again. Like, only my mom is going to listen to this because she has to. And then, you know, we launch and the launch is successful and we started really getting traction. And so that was really exciting. And the traction, and I was really fortunate, I will say, to work at a law firm, Castles Brock and Blackwell, an incredible firm that really is engaged in pushing diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives within the firm and within the community, legal community, and the community at large, and was incredibly supportive of me creating this podcast, and they sponsored season one. And so that was a huge win, and that was really exciting. And season one ultimately led to a media partnership that I can't yet disclose, but very excited to be moving forward with, you know, and that's really exciting. It means that we're getting to develop season two. And now, of course, again, I'm in that place of like, oh my God, how do I do this again and create a new season with that's, you know, produced in a different way. And we've got a lot of exciting stuff in the works for season two. So still really riding those waves, but it's amazing. And I feel like that's where the magic happens, in the discomfort of bringing something new into the world.
It indeed is. Like, it's remarkable just what you've caused in such a short amount of time. And I'm sure there's other things bubbling away there in the background that have yet to spring their heads out and say, guess what? As a result of this, we are doing this now. So I feel like there's just magic that's about to launch. And I love that you spoke to riding that wave, you know, in terms of those first fears and the uncomfortableness, and it's really remarkable. I mean, if we even think about law backgrounds, and here you are essentially having a disruptive conversation, which makes me your number one fan because I love disruptors, right? It's like, you know, you're having a disruptive conversation in the very industry that you chose, like your profession, and you've had nothing but, well, okay, that's from the outside, nothing but support. But, you know, have you encountered any challenges that have caused you to falter or say, whoa, what am I doing? Or speak a little bit about that if you would.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so season one, I don't totally know what I'm doing. So we start recording and we have, I think, about 4 episodes in the can when we launch, and we figure, okay, great, we're a few weeks ahead of things. Amazing. And, you know, life happens and things happen. And I started with people who I had access to, and then was really trying to find other guests and find the right guests. And so there were we had 2 interviews, unfortunately, that we recorded that just, there were internet issues and the recordings didn't work. The quality wasn't good enough to air. The conversations themselves were incredible. So it's really unfortunate, but it ended up kind of setting us back. And there was 1 week and we got to a point where we don't have an episode to launch, and we dropped an episode every Tuesday, and here we are on Monday, and I kind of forget it. Like, we're not putting out an episode tomorrow. It's fine. There'll be an episode next Tuesday. And had a few people reach out and, you know, had to just share. We had had technical difficulties. But I think you kind of just have to be willing to roll with the punches and adapt and move forward, and know that particularly at the beginning, things aren't going to be perfect. And a perfect example of done is better than perfect. If I had been going for perfection, which actually I was for the first probably 2 years that I had this idea, it didn't get made. And as soon as I stepped back and said, okay, yeah, you know what? I want a podcast that's produced at the level of Serial, but I can't do that right now. So why don't I just sit down and start having conversations with people? You know, that's what allowed me to take that next step in making it happen. So more production will be happening, I think, in season 2, and we will now have the ability to produce the whole season before we launch it. And so we'll mitigate some of that, but I wouldn't change any of it. It is just the perfect learning and growth journey.
Which is hilarious, because in the background of this, a chipper on the street decided to come down and I'm having to mute. That's so hilarious. And you know what? It's kind of like the world is faced with working at home and all these background noises, which is then disrupting our idea of, you know, professionalism and perfectionism and all of it. And I hear in that too, like, you know, and thanks for being willing to share, you know, some of the challenges that you've experienced. And, you know, I hear resiliency despite setback. Like just my experience of you is you're so committed that you just see things through no matter what. Thanks for being that and doing that.
Thank you.
So you spoke a little bit about some things that are popping and happening and a major media interested. And what's the impact overall? Like in your wildest dreams, what would you love in terms of seeing impact from your podcast and these interviews with these incredible humans?
In my wildest dreams, and really my goal was that I kind of mentioned this before, I think, you know, people who are on the hiring end within organizations actually taking the time to have the conversation with this person and to figure out a way to make it work if they can, to hire them, to give them an opportunity. And, you know, does that mean more training or mentorship? Or maybe it does, but recognizing that it's both important to put in the time to do that, and that in doing it, you're gaining someone who's going to be a loyal and dedicated employee and so value that you've put in that time and taken the chance. So that was a huge part of it. And we've been really fortunate. Like I've had people reach out to me who have said, yeah, we've had this person or that. I mean, without, you know, they obviously they're not naming names, but we had someone apply with a criminal record and, you know, we had a conversation and there was really no impact on their ability to do the job they were being hired for. So we've hired them anyway. And my hope and my dream would be that that just continues to happen more and more and more. And sort of an unintended impact that really warmed my heart was hearing from a couple of people who are currently, you know, in the system and potentially facing jail time, and who said that the stories that they were hearing were really inspiring and that it felt like this was kind of the end of the road, that the idea of going to prison or jail really was the end of the road. And that hearing from these people who had gone on to do these incredible things really kind of restored their faith in the fact that there was a future for them. And so I think truly, I hope that I don't even know what the impacts will be, but that they will be many. But yeah, that was kind of when I started it, my intention was really for the sharing of these stories to open more doors and to create more opportunity for people as they're reentering the community.
Mm-hmm. I totally got that. And what do you see for this season in particular? Anything that you're particularly focused on?
The upcoming season?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think there are some themes that have come up that we really want to tease out a little bit more. I think there were things that we really only scratched the surface of in season one. And I guess I'll tease it right now and let's hope that this is actually where we go with it. But one of those themes is really around forgiveness and grace. And it came up in one of the stories in particular about one of the people who I interviewed who had shot someone and who in the end, and this was Lewis L. Reed, he has now connected with this person and they've been in conversation and been able to make amends. And there are so many stories like that and really incredibly powerful stories. I would love to really highlight some of those because I think that when you can hear from and I'd love to bring together both of these parties. Like when you can hear from, I kind of hate to use this terminology, but I think it's the easiest way to help everyone. And it's kind of where we're at, understand the kind of quote unquote victim offender. If you can see that the two of them can come together and that there can be grace and forgiveness in that context, then who are we as outsiders in society to not be able to extend that same grace to these same people? And I think seeing people be able to really move past their emotions that are tied to whatever it is that happened and to be able to see the humanity in someone and to be able to recognize that hanging on to that anger and whatever else is there isn't actually productive for anybody and to be able to pass it, like that's so powerful. And so that is one of the themes that I'm sort of hoping to pick up on and move forward with in season two.
I can think of so many parallels in our country, in our world right now, where forgiveness and grace, if we were all focused or use those as our anchor points, that Yeah, imagine the world where forgiveness and grace was the thing that we really generated all our conversations from.
Right? I want to live in that world.
Me too. Me too. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, you know, living in that world, you know, we touched a little bit on having these disruptive conversations. And well, what might be perceived as disruptive to some, and to me, it's just like, yeah, we need to be having these conversations. We need to be, you know, listening to the impact, to hear the human underneath, rather than holding the labels. And the thing I think about is, you know, if we look at the criminal justice system, we can point to so many things that need changed, transformed, shifted, updated. Talk to me a little bit about the overwhelm that that seems to be versus getting started somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so easy to look at systems change is such a beast. It really is. And I've done a systems change work in a bunch of areas, and it's hard to navigate. And there are so many players and there are so many issues that you can tackle. And if you're sitting and listening to the news on a loop, which you could do it all day long, you know, it's really easy to just become overwhelmed with everything that's wrong in the world. And I think instead taking a step back from that and really thinking, okay, what is one thing that I am so passionate about that gets me and maybe your passion comes in a different way, right? Maybe it's a thing that gets you super fired up, that when you're hearing about it or seeing that it exists, you can't stand it. Take that thing, start there. And what's one thing, big or small, that you can do? And if the thing that you can do is small, great, just start taking steps towards it. And if that thing that you're thinking about is a little bit bigger, just break it down into smaller steps, and just take that first baby step and the second baby step, and just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And you don't necessarily always know exactly where that's going to lead or exactly what the next step is going to be, but just starting to take those steps and starting to do what you can to affect change in whatever area is important to you.
Thanks for sharing that, because I'm sure there are people sitting in our audience who may stop at the overwhelm and the beast that something is. I totally get that. It's really about breaking it down, small steps. And also, I love the thing that you alluded to there. It's that there's so much that we can control and do and be, and there is magic. There is a somewhat of a trusting that something will happen. I'm sure you never imagined some of the things that have happened, engaging media and a following that's more than your mom, right? It's like, as you described, you hope for these things. Some of the things that have happened to you, I'm sure you never in your wildest dreams maybe imagined. Trusting that there's more out there that'll happen, that is an amazing side effect from it, is part of the fun in launching something that's uncomfortable.
I'm so with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. What else haven't we talked about necessarily that you're like burning to share?
I don't know if there is anything else. I think we've covered a lot.
We have. I think encouraging people to really listen and sit with the stories with an open mind. My opinion is that opening our hearts and our minds, that our world is pretty polarized currently, or there's a pull to polarize us. Mm-hmm. And I think if I were to throw an opinion out there, being the disruptor that I am, sure, we could sit in our polarized, I'm right, you're wrong situation, or we could look at a whole new paradigm, which is a more open listening, a consideration that there is no truth. No, what is truth? It's as good as the next person's perception of what occurred. And to just sit with an open mind in listening to the podcast, listening to those beautiful people and the many more that I'm sure are going to grace you with their stories, and to be open-minded and open-hearted in our listening.
Yeah, I agree with you. And actually, I think to really try to connect, I think it's really easy, again, to kind of point a finger or place a judgment. But the reality is that I would guess most of us have done something at some point that wasn't legal, whether that was parking in an illegal spot or speeding or grabbing a, you know, something out of a bulk container in the store and trying it without paying for it, even though I don't know if people are doing that as much anymore, but a little harder to sneak a Swedish berry with your mask on. But, you know, there are so many things that people just do mindlessly or thoughtlessly that aren't really by the book. And so it's, again, it's really easy to judge other people for the ways in which they're drawing outside the lines. And if we actually start to really think about where we show up as fully human, it, I think, makes it a lot easier to connect.
At the end of the day, there's punishment and then there's conversation. Mm-hmm. There's connection, there's forgiveness. And I think some of our ways, if you will, you know, again, it's that polarization, that keeping people away from each other rather than actually bringing them together and supporting them to talk things out and through.
Yeah.
I've heard from people that have gone through the system, that committed a crime or been a victim of crime, and there's still the impact. It's like the punishment doesn't actually resolve what the heart wants resolved.
Yeah.
And so it really just begs the question, if we're seeing that and that's the ongoing symptom for both victim and offender, then how come we're not taking a look at that more closely?
Yeah, well, the entire restorative justice community would agree with you on that. There's a huge movement in that space, and there's still a lot more work to be done, I think, in terms of adoption, but these practices exist and people are using them all over the place. And we need to do a better job of moving from the traditional adversarial system for everything into, I think, a more collaborative approach to addressing so many conflicts where the courtrooms aren't the appropriate forum for so many issues that are still being addressed there.
Thank you so much. You are such a beautiful human with the most incredible combination of power and brilliance and the equally amazing and large heart to just really stand in there and really truly be the change.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all that you're doing and for risking discomfort and putting yourself out there to actually bring this conversation to everyone's living room. I really urge my listeners to jump onto the field. I've posted a link on my website so that makes it easy. You just click the button and you hear your beautiful voice and your people. But thank you. Thank you so much for one small step that turned into a large movement and for just having the guts to go after it.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Talk to Tea with Zoe Pallier. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe and always leave room for a little magic in your life.